You are listening to Lighthearted, the official podcast of the United States Lighthouse Society. My name is Jeremy D'Entremont. Welcome. Today is March 10th, 2024, and this is episode 268 of Lighthearted. With me today as co-host is Cindy Johnson, who has co-hosted more than 100 episodes. I think it's pretty well way over 100 by this time of this podcast, dating back to the first episode in June 2019. Hi, Cindy.
Woohoo. Hi, Jeremy.
Isn't it amazing? We're closing in on 300 episodes.
Wow, it is.
Yeah. So in a few minutes, we're going to listen to a conversation about a beautiful and unique lighthouse in the state of New Jersey. But before we get to that interview, I want to mention a couple of interesting things related to one of my favorite New England lighthouses, Rose Island in Newport, Rhode Island.
Yes, the Rose Island Lighthouse and Fort Hamilton Trust is offering the opportunity for a Rhode Island-based artist to stay on the island for 6 nights in mid-September to work on their projects. Up to 8 artists will be selected for participation. Artists whose work may be uniquely inspired by the environment and or history of Rose Island are encouraged to apply.
What a great location for that kind of thing. Rose Island is very close to the city of Newport. When you're on the island, you can see Newport in the distance, but you feel like you're far away from civilization. I've stayed there overnight twice, and I love it. People can get more info about the artist residency program at roseisland.org.
Also on the website, people can get information about a new Rhode Island license plate that features Rose Island Lighthouse. You can help to support the preservation of the lighthouse by purchasing the Rose Island Charity license plate for your car. You need to have a car registered in Rhode Island, of course.
Yeah, I think we may have a few people in Rhode Island listening to this podcast, I hope.
Oh, for sure.
Shout out to our Rhode Islanders listening. Roadies. What do you call them? Little roadies?
I'm not that sure sounds great to me.
Yeah. You can get more on the license plate also at roseisland.org. Before we get to our interview, has anything happened on this date in lighthouse history, Cindy?
Yes, actually. On March 10th, 1852, Carey's Fort Lighthouse, about 5 miles east of Key Largo in Florida, was first lighted. It took 4 years to build the wrought iron skeletal-type tower, which is 120 feet tall. General George Meade, who later commanded the Army of the Potomac during the Civil War, was involved in the design. There had been lightships stationed on the reef going back to 1825.
In 2019, Carey's Fort Reef Lighthouse was made available to an eligible new steward under the provisions of the National Historic Lighthouse Preservation Act. Qualified entities were given 60 days to submit a letter of interest. There were no acceptable applications, so the General Services Administration held an online auction in 2022. The auction ended on May 16, 2022, with a high bid of $415,000. I have absolutely no knowledge of who won that auction. So if you're listening, owner of Carey's Fort Lighthouse, we would love to hear from you. Jeremy at uslhs.org. Please shoot me an email if you're listening. So before we move on to today's interview, I want to mention something about the episode that was posted on Sunday, March 3rd, the last episode. We had a segment that was an interview with Patrick Mont, who was a clockmaker for Chelsea Clock near Boston. And Chelsea Clock made the clocks of choice for the U.S. Lighthouse Service for many, many years. In that interview, Patrick and I were wondering if there were pocket watches that keepers use also. Chelsea Clock did not produce pocket watches, and we weren't sure about that. I just had a call today from my friend Chad Kaiser, manager out at New Dungeness Lighthouse in Washington, very involved in the U.S. Lighthouse Society, et cetera. He's been on this podcast. He's a real aficionado of this sort of thing, and he said, yes, they did have pocket watches, or pocket stopwatches, to be exact. So if they had, if it was a lighthouse that had a rotating mechanism or a fog bell or fog horn or anything like that that needed to be timed precisely, they would have a pocket stopwatch for that, made by other companies. I saw there's one on eBay currently. And it's made by a company called Continental. Beautiful watch. There's U.S. Lighthouse Establishment on it. So thank you, Chad, for clearing that up. And I think we can move on at this point to our interview for today. So, Cindy, please help me out.
Sure, Jeremy. Hereford Inlet, a break in the Barrier Islands along the east side of Cape May, New Jersey, was used by whalers as far back as the 17th century. Shifting sands and a strong current made the inlet dangerous for mariners. As coastal shipping and the use of the inlet increased, funds for a lighthouse were appropriated in 1872.
A wood frame combined keeper's house and lighthouse began service in 1874. The beautiful Victorian design was the work of the Lighthouse Board's chief draftsman, architect Paul J. Pells. A severe storm damaged the foundation of the building in August 1913, which led to the relocation of the lighthouse, and it now stands 150 feet west of its original location.
Until 1962, the light station was home to resident keepers and their families. After automation, the building was neglected and boarded up for nearly 20 years. Then, in 1982, the lighthouse property was leased to the city of North Wildwood, and it was restored in the years that followed.
Today, the lighthouse is managed by the City of North Wildwood's Historical Commission. There's a museum and gift shop, and there are beautiful gardens on the grounds. A fourth-order Fresnel lens, once used in the lighthouse, is on display in the museum, along with other antiques and lighthouse memorabilia.
Our guest today, W. Scott Jett, is the city historian and the city clerk for the City of North Wildwood, and he's the chairman of the City of North Wildwood's Historical Commission. He's also the author of a book, Borough of Anglesey, 1885 to 1906, which discusses the growth of the neighborhoods around Hereford Inlet Lighthouse.
It was a pleasure speaking with Scott the other day. When you listen to this interview, you'll see how devoted Scott is to the lighthouse and the community. So let's listen to my conversation with W. Scott Jett now. I'm speaking today with W. Scott Jett, who is the chairman of the City of North Wildwood's Historical Commission, as well as the city clerk. And he is also, of course, very involved with the management of Hereford. Scott just corrected me on the pronunciation. Hereford Inlet Lighthouse, which is our main subject for today. So thank you so much for being with me today, Scott.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
And let's before we get into the lighthouse, just a little bit about your background. I understand your family's roots go pretty far back in North Wildwood. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yeah, I would be happy to. My great-grandfather arrived in North Wildwood in 1913, along with a couple of his brothers. They settled here in the neighborhood where I grew up, between 14th and 18th Avenues. And I still have relatives that live on 18th Avenue. The family's been there for four generations now. My children all grew up on 17th Avenue, where we had bought a property after my grandparents passed away. We bought that from their estate. So the family's been in town here for 111 years.
Wow. Sounds like you must like it.
Yeah. Great place to live. Great place to grow up. I'm actually off the island now for the last couple of years over in Middle Township. We downsized after the kids grew up and got out of the house. But I'm back on the island every day for work and frequently on weekends, too. Just a great place to be.
Yeah. Sounds like you have some pretty deep roots there. Is it correct to say you're also the city historian in addition to the other things that I mentioned?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, you are the city historian for North Wildwood. So how did all that come about?
Well, I had been in the position of city clerk for a few years when about 10 years ago, I received a communication from the state of New Jersey reminding municipalities that they should have a city historian in place. So I took that communication with me to the next city council meeting, read it to mayor and council. And as I was reading it, I realized, and so did they, that I was doing most of the things on that list already.
Yeah.
So I was already keeping historical records. I was always already at that time well into the preservation of our historic records in the city, our meeting minutes and ordinances and resolutions that date back to 1885. So I was heavily involved in it already. And like I said, as I was reading that, mayor and council came to the realization that I was already doing it. And lo and behold, at the next council meeting, they adopted a resolution appointing me the city historian officially. So I was already working on the North Wildwood History Series, which is a history of the city of North Wildwood. The first volume is Borough of Anglesey, 1885 to 1906. North Wildwood was called Anglesey until 1906. The second volume has already been published as well. The 125-year anniversary of the Anglesey Fire Company, and Volume 3, which will be North Wildwood, 1906 to 1917. I'm about 75% done that right now. So I was already doing the work. So council, mayor and council just made it official by making the appointment of me as the city historian. So I've been the clerk for 12 years in the historian for 9 or 10.
Excellent. It sounds like it's kind of a big puzzle with the pieces coming together pretty well.
It is. History's yeah. always been a passion of mine, so it just fits right in with the work that I'm doing. It's not a burden or tedious at all to me. It's very interesting, and since my family's been here for so long, I feel it's very important for me to continue with it.
Absolutely. So as the chair of the Historical Commission and as city historian, what exactly is your role with the lighthouse specifically?
At this point, control of the lighthouse falls under the Historical Commission. As the chairman of the commission, mm-hmm. we do maintain the staffing of the lighthouse. It's open during the summertime. We maintain through the city's buildings and grounds department maintenance of the lighthouse, routine maintenance of the gardens. And we see to it that people are welcomed there and we have good staff that is very knowledgeable in the history of the lighthouse. So our job at this point, under a lease that we have with the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection, which owns the property, we're the tenants of it, the caretakers of it. And we do our best to make sure that it's in good shape for the public to see. Obviously, public access, an important part of anything owned by the state government. And when the director of leases and concessions of the Department of Environmental Protection was here a couple years ago with a colleague of his, I'm not sure exactly what his title was, they were walking a few feet in front of me as we toured the grounds and came out of the lighthouse. And the director of leases and concessions did mention to his friend or his colleague, "I wish all of our properties owned by the state were as well kept as Hereford Inlet." So mm-hmm. It wasn't meant for me to hear, but I happened to be close enough, and it surely confirmed our belief that we're trying our best to take care of this historic structure.
Oh, yeah. Always nice to overhear something that's positive.
Yeah, doesn't happen all the time.
Right. That's really nice. So let's talk a bit about the history of the lighthouse. First of all, just a basic question. Why was a lighthouse needed there in the first place?
Well, as you can imagine, with our location at the southern tip of the state of New Jersey, we're right in the maritime shipping lanes between New York City, Philadelphia, Baltimore, Washington, and all up and down the East Coast. As you're well aware, the North Atlantic is sometimes not a friendly place for shipping. And Hereford Inlet has experienced literally hundreds of shipwrecks over the years. And the lighthouse at Hereford Inlet was built in 1874. I like to tell people as a welcome and a warning. It's a welcome because when you're out there in treacherous seas, the best place for you to get to is into an inlet where the waters are calm, where the waves are not as big, where the wind might not be as strong. So it was a welcome for people to get into that inlet, but it's also a warning because Hereford Inlet itself is a very dangerous place. Mm-hmm. There's changing currents, changing sandbars, shoals. It changes almost daily, if you look, and continues to do so. So that lighthouse was also built as a warning for the dangerous areas if that ship was getting too close.
That's interesting you use that phrase. I do it a lot in my lectures. I tell people lighthouses were built usually either for welcome or warning, but many serve both yeah. purposes, as yours does.
Correct.
Yeah, both
Correct.
Welcome and warning. Yeah. So I think people have certain pictures in their mind when they think of a lighthouse, you know, a tall white lighthouse and so forth. But as our listeners know, there's many different kinds of lighthouses. So the style of Hereford Inlet Lighthouse is pretty unusual for the East Coast. So could you tell me who designed it and what do you think makes the design special?
It is unique to the East Coast. In fact, it's the only one designed like it on the East Coast. Paul Pelz, who was actually a designer of the Library of Congress, is the one that designed Hereford Inlet Lighthouse, along with four other what we would call sister lighthouses out on the West Coast. Two of them still exist at Point Fermin in Los Angeles and East Brother in San Francisco Bay. And the unique requirement for here was that when the Hereford Inlet Lighthouse was built in 1874, there was no other permanent structure on Five Mile Beach. So a lighthouse had to be built with a house around it where the lighthouse keeper, and if he had a family, where the family could live. So yeah. Not only unique, but a necessity in that case. There wasn't anything else here except forests, sand dunes, woods, marshes. They needed a place for the keeper to live.
It's a beautiful, beautiful building. Also, to me, I think of the word cozy. It just looks like it would have been a kind of a cozy place for the keepers and their families to live.
Yeah. It's very, very interesting place. When our visitors inside go inside in the summertime, they're just amazed. It's not just a brick shell with a light at the top. It's a house. There was the kitchen. There's the dining room or a parlor, a formal living room. There's bedrooms upstairs along with the lighthouse keeper's office. Mm-hmm. And then visitors can go up two more levels above that, as high as you can go in the lighthouse, to the watch room and get a wonderful view of Hereford Inlet and large parts of Cape May County.
Yeah. And it hasn't changed much, right? From what I can see, it looks pretty much the same as it did 150 years ago.
As far as we can tell, it's mm-hmm. been restored to as close as we can tell to what it was like when it was built in 1874.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous place. So let's talk a little bit about the human history. First of all, it's my understanding that the first keeper wasn't there very long. So what can you tell me about him?
John March was the first keeper. When the lighthouse was lit on May 11th of 1874, he was there. Unfortunately, there was no connection to the mainland for 11 more years. So anything that the keeper needed to get from the mainland, he had to get on a boat and get across the inlet and what we call the bay, what's called Beach Creek, over to the mainland. And we've already discussed how dangerous Hereford Inlet is. So Lighthouse Keeper March was only there for 3 months when his boat, when he was coming back to the lighthouse from the mainland, his boat capsized in a storm and he passed away drowning in Hereford Inlet. So that would have been in August of 1874.
Did he have a family living with him at the lighthouse?
I've found no evidence of anybody else other than John March being there at that time.
People have a romantic idea of what lighthouse keeping was like, but it was a dangerous job for sure.
They're right near the water out of necessity. And when you're near the water, especially the North Atlantic Ocean, there can be some dangerous circumstances. And unfortunately, Mr. March met with one here.
A short time later, a man named Freeling Hewitt became keeper. And it was kind of the opposite story with him. He ended up being there 45 years, which is pretty incredible. You know, I've been doing lighthouse research for a long time, and I know of very few, probably only maybe a couple in the country, of cases where keepers were at a single lighthouse for more time than that. It's very unusual. What was notable about him besides being there for so long?
Freeling Hewitt was a Civil War veteran. He was a native of here of Cape May County from Cape May Courthouse, which is right over on the mainland. He was appointed in September of 1874, and as you mentioned, was here for 45 years. He retired in 1919. Freeling Hewitt did have his family here, his wife and two daughters. One of his daughters was actually married in the lighthouse. And Freeling Hewitt was an icon in the community. He was the president of city council. He was the first chief of the Anglesey Fire Company. He was a member of the sinking fund appointed by city council to help manage debt and reduce debt under the auspices of the municipal government. He was just everywhere, did everything, and well respected in the borough of Anglesey. And then later, of course, as it became the city of North Wildwood, he was just a man that could do anything. And if you needed something, he was the man to go to. He actually held the first religious services on the island, a Baptist church service that he started in the lighthouse as well.
Now, did he get to retire, or did he actually die in the position?
He retired in 1919, mm-hmm. and the lighthouse is just a little bit north of First Avenue. He had a property on First Avenue and also had a property over on Third Avenue and moved in with his wife there after his retirement. He lived about four more years until he passed away.
Probably missed the lighthouse a lot in those last 4 years.
I believe he did, but you know, the family, the Hewitt family, was very well connected in Cape May County. He had a cousin that was mayor of North Wildwood twice. Mm-hmm. Well, when it was still Anglesey, he had another cousin that was a contractor here in town and actually built the first borough hall in 1886. And there have been Hewitt. I went to high school with people named Hewitt. The Hewitts have been in Cape May County and on this island for just about as long as my family has.
It's quite a legacy. So before we move on, anything else to do with the people who live there, the keepers and families over the years? Anything that kind of stands out for you?
You know, that's a very interesting question. I do like to think about the keeper whose name escapes me right off the top of my head, in 1938 when there was a fire in the lighthouse, who was very instrumental, of course, in keeping the damage from spreading. He was helped by the Coast Guard building next door. And of course, the Anglesey Volunteer Fire Department was right down the street. But there was a fire in the lighthouse in 1938. In 1950s, there was a man named Mr. Baker, who was the lighthouse keeper. He had some children that lived there with him. And one of his sons was named Jack Baker. And Jack Baker and my mother dated when they were in high school.
Oh, wow.
So my mother had a closer connection to the lighthouse than I did.
Wow,
long
that's
before
neat.
Me, of course. But yeah. Mr. Baker and his wife would once in a while come to my office with a picture of Jack and my mother. If they had been out on a date or went into a little photo booth to take your picture. And they used to bring me pictures once in a while and little mementos of when my mother used to spend some time at the lighthouse.
Oh, that's neat. What a neat connection. If we could talk a little bit about World War II, it sounds like that was a pretty interesting time at the lighthouse.
It was an interesting time with the German U-boats in the Atlantic Ocean, which if you look at a chart of wrecks along the Atlantic coast of the United States, many, many of them are due to German U-boats in 1942 and 1943. And my mother used to tell me that the beach during World War II was just one big oil slick from the wrecked ships from the German U-boats. Of course, as everything else happened on the coast during the war, the lighthouse was darkened to not have the German submarines be able to see lights or anything on the coast. So it was darkened very early in 1942. And then relit in May of 1945 after Germany surrendered. But it was still part of the where the Coast Guard area is next door and was used and maintained and probably had people living in it as well. But the lighthouse itself was darkened during the war.
Yeah. People don't realize how huge that U-boat scourge along the East Coast was during the war. Up here in New England as well, but I think even more so down your way and farther south. As you said, a lot of vessels sunk.
Yeah, and the of course there was room. I've heard rumors my whole life here of U-boat crews came ashore to go to the store or to get something to eat. There was a big fire on the Wildwood Boardwalk. The Ocean Pier burnt to the ground on December 25th, 1943. I've heard rumors that the fire started because the German U-boat fired its gun at it. I've heard all kinds of different rumors about the U-boats and all, but the fact is that they sunk a lot of ships that were going up and down the coast.
Yeah. It seems like all along, there's a lot of rumors like that in various places, related to those U-boats. Somebody who was the son of a lighthouse keeper up in Newfoundland in Canada told me that when he was a kid during the war, they would actually find things like a German phrase book, German English phrase book left behind. Really? He thought it was psychological warfare. They were saying, we've been here. So I don't know, again, that's sort of a rumor type thing, but.
Pretty good idea if it was true.
Yeah. So you mentioned the Coast Guard station a couple of minutes ago. Over the years, several life-saving service and later Coast Guard stations served Hereford Inlet. I think that goes all the way back to 1849, which predated the formation of the U.S. Life-Saving Service. Can you just maybe fill in a little bit more of that history?
Yes, the Life-Saving Service actually had one of its life-saving stations here, and we believe it was placed in 1849. And it was about, as far as we can tell, about 500 or 600 feet east of where the lighthouse was set at that time. Around First and Surf Avenues, we do have one of our historical markers up there commemorating the life-saving service. They were portable stations. They could move around based on where the necessity was. If Hereford Inlet had suffered erosion, they could move it back a little bit so it wouldn't wash into the inlet. They could move it around, which was important not only to help people who would have been involved in shipwrecks, but also because, as we've mentioned, the changing conditions at Hereford Inlet was necessary for them to be able to move it. There was another temporary one that was built in 1871, and then one next to the lighthouse that was built in 1888. And that was there at the time that the life-saving service and the lighthouse service and revenue cutter service all morphed into today what we now know as the Coast Guard. And then the current building that's up next to the lighthouse now was built in 1938 as part of the Coast Guard and is now part of the Marine Division of the New Jersey State Police.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that. That's interesting. Yeah. So skipping ahead a little bit, the lighthouse was, as I understand, pretty much abandoned in 1962. Is that right? And fell into quite a bad disrepair from what I've read.
Yes, it was in pretty bad shape, Jeremy, after the war. And as for whatever reasons, budget cuts or, downsizing of the Coast Guard or whatever, they ended up not having anybody live in the lighthouse after 1962. And in 64, an automated light was put on a steel tower in the backyard, and the lighthouse itself was darkened.
Was it ever talked about that it would actually be demolished? Was the Coast Guard considering that?
Well, I was very young at the time, but the mayor of North Wildwood at the time was a man named Anthony Catanoso, who was actually mayor for more than 26 years and grew up here and saw everything that had happened with the lighthouse. And he tried for many years to get the lighthouse to become a possession of the city of North Wildwood. When the federal government decided to sell it, they actually sold it to the state of New Jersey. The state didn't take care of it very much either. And by 1982, as you mentioned, it was in a horrible state of disrepair. But it was in 1982 that Mayor Catanoso convinced the State Department of Environmental Protection to lease the building to the city of North Wildwood. So in 1982, September of 82, is when the city was able to take control of it, tenancy rather, under the lease, and restoration efforts began one room at a time, people donating their time, donating their money. And there's been over the years grants, historic preservation grants. So it's been restored, as we've mentioned before, about as close as we can tell to its condition in 1874. And Mayor Catanoso is obviously the most important figure in that transition to having it restored to the way it was.
And, those of us who've dealt with lighthouse preservation at all know that that job of restoration is never completed. If you think you finish everything and something needs some work, is there anything in the pipeline right now? Any projects in the works?
Right now, we're just in routine maintenance of the lighthouse. It's been restored as far as we can tell to its original condition. We do have a gazebo on the property where weddings are held, special events are held and things. That gazebo's probably 40 years old. We're actually in the midst of trying to upgrade that and make the grounds a little bit more pretty for the people come in and see, and also more useful as well with a new gazebo. The lighthouse itself just needs routine maintenance at this point. The top of the tower is metal sheathing that leaks once in a while. We just had some major work done on the roof last year. Mm-hmm. But at this point, we're in pretty good shape.
Good, good. Glad to hear there's nothing major. And you just mentioned the grounds earlier. You mentioned the gardens at the lighthouse. They've actually won awards. Can you tell me about the history of the gardens and who actually maintains them today?
Well, after restoration of the lighthouse began in the early 1980s, the park superintendent of the city of North Wildwood, Steve Murray, at that time, designed the Victorian gardens and put them into place through much effort and a great job that he did. And the lighthouse and the gardens, well, the gardens itself are now maintained by the city's building, parks, and grounds department.
Great. If people visit there, the lighthouse is open on a regular basis, right? So besides seeing the beautiful building from the outside and seeing the gardens, what can people expect to see when they visit there?
Well, we open the lighthouse to the public. We start on Friday of Mother's Day weekend. So this year will be May 10th. And then it's open 9 to 5, 7 days a week until the third weekend in October. Mm-hmm. It's a self-guided tour. Of course, we do have people working in there that can answer questions. We have a gift shop in there with memorabilia about the lighthouse and different things that people might be interested in. It's a self-guided tour on the first floor. The office where our staff sits is originally the kitchen. Then there's the parlor and the living room on the first floor. On the second floor are two bedrooms plus the lighthouse keeper's office, and then the work room and then the watch room above that. So you can go up 4 levels inside the lighthouse. We mentioned Point Furman as being a sort of a twin of the Hereford Inlet Lighthouse. Over the kitchen in Point Firmin, from pictures that I've seen, I haven't been there personally, looks like there's a full bedroom above that kitchen, whereas Hereford Inlet is just an attic in there. On that side of the lighthouse, Point Firmin is a little bit taller. Just that's the only difference that I've seen, is that we just have an attic. You can go in and stand up in the attic, but it's not a full bedroom, which it looks like Point Firmin has.
I visited Point Firmin Lighthouse back in 2015, but surprisingly, since I live on the East Coast, I haven't been to Hereford Inlet Lighthouse yet, but you just mentioned Mother's Day. I'm going to be visiting around that time during a trip I have planned down the New Jersey coast. So I'm very much looking forward to finally seeing it in person.
Good. I hope you and I can get together while you're down here.
I hope so. Yeah, I'll keep you in the loop on that, definitely. So very much looking forward to that trip. So back to the lighthouse as an aid to navigation. The light, I believe you mentioned earlier, was deactivated in the lighthouse, and the light was put in a separate skeletal type tower quite a few years ago. But is the lighthouse an aid to navigation today?
It is. The lighthouse is an active aid to navigation maintained by the United States Coast Guard. I mentioned that when the lighthouse itself went dark in 1964, the automated light was put up in the backyard. That was what they called a DCB-24, was maintained by the lighthouse or by the Coast Guard. It actually functioned in the backyard until 1986. When the restoration of the lighthouse was taking place, the Coast Guard agreed to take that DCB-24 and put it inside the lighthouse. So the lighthouse itself became lit again in 1986. They took out the lens that was there, put the DCB-24 in there, and it functioned in there until 2018. I was actually coming into town over the Grassy Sound Bridge late on a Friday night, and I saw the light flash, and then it stopped flashing. So I went directly there. The light was still on. It was the rotating mechanism that had malfunctioned. I contacted the Coast Guard. They came and inspected, and that light was so old, they used to have to come once a month for routine maintenance. They indicated to me that because the light was so old, they didn't work with that kind of light anymore. They could send it to a company in Texas to have it refurbished. The city would have to pay for it. It would cost about $25,000. I asked what the other options were. They said, we can put the VRB
25.
25, yes, the VRB 25. Mm-hmm. They said, we'll put that in now. It took a few weeks. And I said, well, what will that cost? And they said, no charge to the city. I said, well, that's the option we're choosing. Yeah. So the VRB-25 has been in there since May of 2018. And obviously with that being the newest kind that they use, they only have to come once a year for maintenance instead of once a month.
Yeah, those DCB, what people sometimes refer to as aerobeacon type lights, mm-hmm. that type of revolving light, they're pretty much gone now. There's still a couple of lighthouses that haven't, but not much. But as you said, they're not being made anymore, and parts are very hard to get for those. Yeah.
You know what really worked out well? That was in May of 2018, and we have a very close relationship with the Coast Guard, especially the aids to navigation team. And what the chief of the team was able to do with that DCB-24 was get approval from his higher-ups to place the DCB-24 back in the lighthouse for public display. So the DCB-24 is on the first floor of the lighthouse inside, with a placard on it explaining it. It functioned on the property for 54 years.
That's great. I was actually going to ask you about that. I was wondering, is an earlier Fresnel lens also there on display?
We have one on the second floor. It's housed in the lighthouse keeper's office. Mm-hmm. As far as I can tell, that was the one that was in the building from 1924 until 86. It was turned off in 1964, but it was in the building until 86. And the interesting thing that I like to tell people about that was, though it was put in 1924, the light wasn't electrified until 1933. And they never electrified the rotating mechanism. So the lighthouse keeper would have to get up every 4 hours and wind it up like a grandfather clock on the pulley system. And the corner box on the wall that goes up and down the entire length of the wall is still there. It's a good place now for the air conditioning duct. But that was actually where the pulley system was. Mm-hmm. The lighthouse keeper would wind up right in his office. There's a compartment that opens up where he would wind it up.
It's lucky that Fresnel Lens made it through those years of abandonment, that it wasn't vandalized or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah. And as you've mentioned, the lighthouse was in pretty bad condition of disrepair. Mm-hmm. So it really is amazing that made through okay.
I don't think there are too many lighthouses that have two generations of lighting like that on display, plus a newer generation of light in the lantern itself. So
three generations up there.
Yeah, well, that's cool. So this is a big year for the lighthouse. It's actually the 150th anniversary. I think you mentioned that at the beginning, anniversary of when it was first lit. Are there any special plans to celebrate that anniversary this year?
We do have plans, Jeremy. The first lighting of the lighthouse, as you mentioned, May 11th, 1874, just happens to be the first Saturday that the lighthouse will be open this year on Mother's Day weekend. So we do have a birthday party planned. We have some interesting things going on there. We have some happy birthday banners. We're going to have a happy birthday cake and we're going to sing. We have some big things planned there for May 11th at the lighthouse.
You know, I may have to look at my schedule and try to rearrange it so I can get some cake. Maybe I can visit that day because cake is definitely an attraction. Any other special events either related to the anniversary or other things that are coming up?
Well, of course, we do celebrate National Lighthouse Day every year on August 7th. We always have a ceremony at the lighthouse, normally some interesting speakers or an interesting presentation about it. And frequently, we hold our Anglesey Day ceremony at the lighthouse. Anglesey Day is celebrated every year on June 3rd. June 3rd, 1885 was the founding of the borough of Anglesey. I happened to be watching an old TV rerun of the Andy Griffith Show one morning, probably 10 or 11 years ago. And Andy and Barney Fife were preparing for Founders Day in Mayberry. And I came in to the next city council meeting. And I said, you know, at that time, it was the 130th, I think, anniversary of the founding of our municipality. And I mentioned it to mayor and council that maybe we'll have some special event or special presentation about that. And mayor and council caught right on and said, let's do it every year. Call it Anglesey Day, the original name of our municipality. So obviously, the lighthouse is so important to the history of the municipality that a number of our Anglesey Day ceremonies have taken place at the Hereford Inlet Lighthouse.
Wondering about the name Anglesey. It's a place in England, right?
It's an island off the coast of Wales, western part of the British Isles. There's also a town in Australia called Anglesey, which I'm sure got its name from the same place we got our name, which was in the British Isles, because it was mostly people from Northwest Europe and the British Isles that ended up here.
Sure.
From this part of the coast.
So you mentioned staff. You do have some staff at the lighthouse. Are there also volunteers?
Well, the staff that we have in the summertime have been there for a long time, and the ones that actually welcome people in and provide for the tours. We have had volunteers in there. We also, you know what, have a lot of volunteers that want to work out in the gardens too. We have frequently requests for me to pass on to our buildings, parks, and grounds department. Somebody wants to help out with the herb garden or taking care of the grounds out there. So yeah, if we do have volunteers there as well.
Okay. If anybody's listening who lives in your general area and is interested in volunteering either at the lighthouse or the gardens or whatever, maybe you already have enough. Maybe you don't need more requests, but if they're interested, is there contact information on the website?
They can go to northwildwood.com is our city website, and my information under the city clerk's office would be right there. I'd be welcome to give me a call.
It sounds like you probably don't have a shortage of people interested in helping out there.
We don't have a shortage, but there's no question that if somebody wants to help out in some way, we would certainly try to accommodate that.
What do you think Hereford Inlet Lighthouse means to the local community there?
Hereford Inlet Lighthouse is the oldest and most historic structure on Five Mile Beach. It's the center part of our entertainment district. It's the central role in our tourism industry here in the city. It's right in the center of the city seal, and it's just the most important thing that we have here in the city. It's been here for 150 years. The municipality's only been here for 139. Mm-hmm. So it was here before there was even any organized government. And it's a very, very important place. It's right next to the Hereford Inlet seawall that hundreds and hundreds of people walk on every day. And it's just a great place to be. It's very important. We have people there. Even the people that don't go to have their wedding there, we have many more people come just to take pictures there. Their wedding pictures or family pictures. I've had family pictures taken at the Hereford Inn Lighthouse. So it's a very important place here in the history and community of North Wildwood.
Lighthouses are often centerpieces of communities all over. Yeah, for sure. So I have one final question for you for bonus points, okay?
Okay.
And that question is, what has been your favorite thing about your association with Hereford Inlet Lighthouse?
Well, Jeremy, in coming onto the island every day, when I come over the Grassy Sound Bridge, which is a tall bridge almost when you're onto the island, the first thing I always look for is the lighthouse. Whether it's day or night, the first thing I look for is the lighthouse. And it's been that way for decades, that it really signifies home when I see that lighthouse. I grew up on 14th Avenue here in North Wildwood. I mentioned that the lighthouse is just north of First Avenue, and the light that was on the tower in the backyard, that automated light, shined in my bedroom when I was growing up. When I was in my bed and looked up at the wall, there was one white flash every 10 seconds. And that signified that the lighthouse was right there. As we mentioned, the first permanent structure on Five Mile Beach, it's like an anchor here in the community. And to be associated with it, to research the history of it, and to try to maintain that history and make others aware of it is just an honor and a pleasure. It's the focus point of my first book about the borough of Anglesey. If there hadn't been a lighthouse there, I don't know if people would have ended up coming here in the first place. It's a draw back then for civilization where there was none. And now it's a draw for tourism, for people visiting. And it's just an important place here in the city.
Beautifully said. As you were talking about driving up and seeing the lighthouse and what it means to you, it reminded me so much. I just interviewed recently the two women at Point Firmin Lighthouse, your sibling over in California. They said virtually the same thing, just that special feeling of driving up and seeing the lighthouse come into view, and they never get tired of it, you know.
I'm anxious to listen to their podcast.
This is just great, Scott. Thank you so much for joining me today. And as I said, I will be visiting there in May, and I hope to meet you in person. I have a big gap in my lighthouse experience because I've seen every lighthouse here in New England and most in New York and some of northern New Jersey. But sadly, I've missed so far a lot of the New Jersey shore and some of the Chesapeake region. So I'm gonna rectify that in May. And okay. Hereford Inlet is on the top of my list for the places to visit on that trip. So really, really looking forward to it.
We look forward to seeing you.
Thank you. I very much appreciate your time today. And I thank you on behalf of everybody for the work you do on behalf of the lighthouse and the history of your area there. It's just, you know, great to speak with somebody who cares so much about that stuff. So thank you so much, Scott.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
For more on Hereford Inlet Lighthouse, check out the website at herfordinletlighthouse.com. That's herefordinletlighthouse.com. There's historical information along with info on hours, events, and volunteering. There's also a brick paver program. You can memorialize a loved one and support the preservation of the lighthouse by purchasing a personalized brick to be installed on the grounds.
As I mentioned in the interview, I am planning to drive down the coast in May, and Hereford Inlet is near the top of my agenda. I should say at the top of my agenda. I'll be filling in a big gap in my East Coast lighthouse visits on that trip from New Jersey down through Maryland, and I'll get a bunch of podcast interviews along the way. So do you have any lighthouse visits planned for this upcoming season, Cindy?
Well, a really good coworker friend of mine has actually never visited a lighthouse, even though she's from Southern Maine originally.
Wow.
So I know. So we need to fix that. So we plan to do some lighthousing for sure this summer. So I'm gonna have to start making that list.
Excellent. Excellent. Wow. A Mainer hasn't
yes,
been to lighthouses.
Yes, for shame.
You have to fix that.
Yes. Oh, we will fix that.
Yeah, and you're the person to do it. So before we sign off today, I want to mention that the U.S. Lighthouse Society recently gave out a round of preservation grants. That program, which was launched in 2015, is one of the most important things the Society does. Anyone who's interested in donating to the grants program can go to uslhs.org and look for the preservation grants program under About in the menu at the top of the page. On the page describing the program, there's a link for donations.
People can also check out the website at uslhs.org to learn about other things the Society does, like domestic and international tours and the Lighthouse Passport Program. All donations help to support this podcast, along with the rest of the Society's mission.
Speaking of that, we're developing a sponsorship program for this podcast. I think we'll be announcing more about that soon. For now, if anyone is interested in being a sponsor, you can email me at jeremy@uslhs.org. And also, speaking of tours, I will be co-leading with my niece, Tina Hans, a main tour this coming October 6th to 12th. We will be seeing 30 lighthouses. Many of them will be open for climbing, and that includes a bunch that are very rarely open to the public, basically never open to the public. But I know people.
Yeah, you do.
I know people with keys. That's one of the advantages to taking a tour of the U.S. Lighthouse Society. You can get info on that tour. It's actually Southern Maine and New Hampshire is the official name. All that information and on all the other tours is at uslhs.org.
If you listen with Apple Podcasts, don't forget to rate and review us.
Next week, we'll be talking about the Michigan Lighthouse Alliance and their upcoming conference. For now, to all our regular listeners and our new ones, thanks so much for listening and
keep a good light. Let it shine, let it shine.